On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Novelist, satirist, blogger, and sometime rocker Neil Pollack never put daddyhood at the top of his Gen X priority list. He was a hipster, a late-night guy who liked the rough side, a literary player, an author, a provocateur, a committed citizen of counterculture, alternative culture, and anything but the paycheck mainstream. Then came love and marriage and the baby. Little Elijah, who needed diapers and burping and silly songs, a lot of things that weren't on Pollack's alt culture playlist. And the crunch began. The hipster lifestyle versus parenthood on the economy's unforgiving edge. Joining me in the studio is Neil Pollack. He is a 36-year-old author now, the once self-proclaimed greatest living American writer. He's the author of two works of satire, the Neil Pollack Anthology of American Literature and his rock and roll novel, Nevermind the Pollacks. In October 2002, he and his wife, Regina, had a son, Elijah. Neil Pollack's new memoir on becoming a father is called Alternadad. Neil Pollack, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
Okay, here you are, daddy hipster. How, did you get a good night's sleep last night?
Oh, I did, because I managed to somehow secure a hotel room without a child in it.
You're on the road again.
That was very nice.
Elijah, how many years? 4 years old now?
He is 4 years old.
And take us back to the pre-baby days. Here's the claim. You were a hipster and dove into fatherhood. What does that mean, you were a hipster? What were you doing when this whole thing started coming at you?
Well, when I became a father, I was mostly traveling around the country doing readings as the greatest living American writer. It was sort of a literary performance art, and I did a lot of performing shirtless and was spitting beer on the audience at readings. And I
readings
was,
in train station bathrooms and
at times, sometimes in bookstores.
Okay,
but in a lot of different places as well. And I was quote unquote turning literary culture on its head, which I wasn't doing at all, of course. But I had the impression in my mind that I was. And
you were in the Dave Eggers circle for a while. They had a falling out, but that was kind of the milieu.
It was the glory days of McSweeney's, or not the glory days, but sort of the early days. And
His publishing house?
It was a publishing company. And so I was in the middle of that. And so it was an exciting time, and I was a little bit out of control.
The Neil Pollack Invasion was your dive into rock and roll?
I had a band called the Neil Pollack Invasion, which I actually started after my son was born. That was very wise of me. But that was sort of my last gasp, and I formed an extremely indie rock band and took them on tour in a van around the country, and we performed songs from our record, Nevermind the Pollacks. Mm-hmm. That was sort of the final my final push and my final failed push, and then I retreated after that, licking my wounds into fatherhood.
And here comes Elijah, born 2002. Your wife Regina, an artist also,
She's a painter,
right? And you trying to do this, you know, the packaging around this has been hipster dad tries to be a dad and hipster at the same time, and that's hard to do. Is that the way you see it? As I read the book last night, I mean, there's another story in here as well, which is that it's just hard to kind of be anything but the clock-punching, paycheck-making, mainstream economy guy and make it in this country in whatever garb or clothes or culture you want to do anymore.
Well, I appreciate you saying that because, I mean, there is this sort of frosting of quote-unquote hipster culture and, parents who dress their kids in rock and roll onesies. And, there is certainly a sort of movement afoot that is somewhat superficial and somewhat not. But also, I mean, it is hard to be a middle-class parent in this country right now. Health insurance is hard to come by. Affordable, decent housing is hard to come by. It's sometimes hard to find decent preschools for your kids. I mean, I'm sure that's...
Almost always.
And I know it's, in some ways people are saying, well, that's the same as it ever was. And that's true. But, my parents had some rough years when I was a kid, yet there was never really a question that I'd be able to go to a good doctor, a decent public school, and have all the sort of benefits that were sort of afforded the middle class, or at least have been since, the World War II era, since post-World War II. And we've seen a little bit of a retreat from that. And so the book is in part a story about, the sort of hip subculture, that sort of hipster parent subculture, but it's also about just an ordinary family trying to get by.
So there's some economic bedrock under this, where suddenly the family is living kind of in a raggedy edge of the economy, down in the house by the interstate where rats and prostitutes end up on the lawn, and it's not your storybook picture of raising a kid. But let me ask you, Neil Pollack, as you approached parenthood with Regina. You know, Regina's pregnant. Here comes the baby. Here you are, literary, provocateur, hipster. That may be the frosting, but it was serious for you. What was it that you wanted to hang on to when you became a dad? You know, did you say, my gosh, here we go. I'm going to be all snugglies and diapers and I can't stand it. I've got to hang on to XYZ. What was it that you didn't want to let go of?
Yeah, I wasn't really reluctant for the responsibility or the diapers or the sort of the day-to-day workings of being a parent. What I didn't want to give up were the sort of the cultural trappings of my life before having a kid. The music, the movies, the video games, you know, the sort of the pop culture that I'd been immersed in since I was a kid, especially because it seemed to me that a lot of the culture available to parents and kids was just lame.
I mean, the mainstream culture.
Mainstream parenting and kid culture was just as lame as it could possibly be. And I know I'm not alone in thinking.
Like what? What do you mean?
Like, you know, the music that was available to us, the Mommy and Me music classes, the quote-unquote gymnastics classes that sometimes you were almost forced to take your kids to, you know, Toys R Us. There's some lousy TV shows, and all that stuff just, was going to be hard to adjust to. So I wanted to try to find some sort of middle ground where I could continue to have the same, you know, interests and tastes that I did before I had a kid. And, you know, it just seemed like there was a lot of cultural push to move me away from that so I could become a quote-unquote dad, whatever that means.
Is this a Generation X problem? I mean, the boomers and even the lagging tail of the boomers became so obsessed on parenthood, on doing everything perfectly, everything right, everything built around and for the kid, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a Generation X problem in surrendering to the child or Generation X reluctance to pick up on mainstream culture's understanding of what child-rearing is?
I think that there's no reluctance to, quote-unquote, I keep saying quote-unquote, but there's no reluctance to, I can't help it, air quotes.
You can just do the air quotes.
Air quotes are built into my DNA. There's no reluctance to surrender to the child. This generation of parents is as responsible and caring as any other generation of parents. But I think that there is a reluctance to submerge yourself in child obsessiveness. I think that there is a reaction ongoing to sort of the completely child-centric culture of the 80s and 90s. And, you know, and there's a sort of a do-it-yourself aspect to parenting culture right now. There's a lot of parents who are, you know, starting their own clothing lines for kids.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of parents who are starting bands. There's a lot of online radio shows where parents and kids are playing music together. And, there's a billion blogs.
All about parenting.
All about parenting and, you know, with varying aesthetics, but with all with the sort of the underlying theme that, you know, we're trying to forge our own path and our own identity as families and not fit into the exact stereotype of families that is foisted upon us. So
let me ask you about this then. No reluctance to surrender the child.
Not at all.
The child's needs. But I read in the book, the night that your wife, Regina, had her first contractions, you were out with a gang of guys you had met on the internet that day in a university apartment, stoned.
I mean, all right.
just reality check.
That's not a generational thing, though. That's just because I'm a moron. And I didn't know Regina was going to have contractions that night.
You know. How could I know? She was only pregnant.
I think I was just being a dope. Me being a dope and a generation of irresponsible parents don't really reconcile. And I want to reiterate, I'm not an irresponsible parent. And I don't know if I come across as one in the book or not. But, I certainly do my best, try to do my best for my kid. But.
But
yeah,
was there a kind of spanking in here for Neil Pollack habits that you had to, take on board? Or are you still determined to be sort of, you know, out when you want to be out, trying to do that and have Elijah at the same time?
I think as Elijah's gotten older and as I've gotten older, I've sort of muted some of those habits to some extent. I mean, I still, I'm still the same guy I was. But, you know, I just get tired more easily now. The longer you have a kid, the more tired you get.
And you must be a parent. The rev it up thing with Elijah is put on the music and dance. What is he like in your hipster household?
Well, I mean, we have this thing called Music Hour. We've had it since he was able to walk. And I'll just pop on some music and we'll dance. Right now, his thing is that he likes to just kind of run around the coffee table, you know, sort of sticking his thumbs up in the air and grooving along. And he, you know,
but the playlist isn't exactly Eensy Weensy Spider.
No, I mean, our current playlist is, I like to call it Garage Rock for Kids. I found a band called the Neanderthals, and they dress in caveman costumes and they play songs about cars and going to space and being cave people. I mean, kids love that stuff. And I play Surfin' Bird for him by the Trashmen.
The Trashmen, right?
That's a a completely innocent song, and he loves that. And I don't know. There's a song about elephants that escape from the zoo in Paris that I found. So the songs are all about space or animals or cave people.
Joe's calling from Priest River, Idaho. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi. I was going to say, great book. About time somebody put their finger on what the problem is. And I just like to comment, hey, as an old school punk rocker from the late 70s and 80s, you know, you try and cling to your ideals, you're I guess not anti anything, you just wanted to be free, and then the kids come, and then it's you got to do what's best for them. And I think what's best for the kids is the parents becoming a fully functional member of society. And I mean, if you can balance the two of being a, you know, quote unquote hipster and being a great parent, that's great. But I think, you know, as they get older, they go to school. You got to have the wife at the PTA meeting. You got to make sure you have money at the bank for the braces.
How did it work for you, Joe? Did you give up the punk rock scene or have it both ways?
Well, philosophically, I still feel the same, and I feel beat down every day working for the man. But what can you do? I mean,
Neil Pollack, we've got Joe, former punk rocker, right here with us. Is this your future, Neil? Beat down by the man, but what can you do?
Well, I mean, I, you know, formed a neighborhood association when I lived in Austin because we had a lot of problems in the neighborhood. We had a crack house. I had prostitutes on my front lawn. So yeah, you have to do it. You know, I find myself volunteering, stuffing envelopes at my kids' preschool, and you know. Yeah, I mean, in some ways you get beat down, and in other ways you just kind of you have to sort of readjust what your identity is. I think that's part of it. But you know, as long as you hang on to your ideals and your interests, you know, the what you do with your days. I mean, you can't go around traveling in vans and sleeping on people's floors into your 40s. It's just your joints can't take it.
Joe, what's your advice to Neil Pollack? Keep fighting the fight or surrender to the package?
Well, I'm kind of envious because it seems like he's done rather well in keeping his ideals, you know, at the forefront of his life.
And the book has been optioned by Hollywood, for heaven's sakes.
Jeez Louise. I mean, he's got the freedom, and he's living the best of both worlds, and I congratulate him.
We got it. Joe in Priest River, Idaho, thanks for calling. Neil, would you read us a little bit here? Give us a taste. By the time Elijah becomes a toddler, what have you got going on here?
It would be my pleasure. No moment in my life was safe from the specter of toddler mayhem. One weekend in May, I was out mooching happy hour drinks off friends, something I only got to do twice a week, maybe three times. Regina called. "Your son," she said, "stuck a noodle in his nose. He won't let me get it out, and he thinks it's funny." Like everything else related to fatherhood, this wasn't a situation for which I had any training. "Do you want me to come home?" I said. "Of course I want you to come home. I'm trying to get this noodle out of his nose. What are we going to do? I looked it up online. He could get an infection. Thank God, at least, that it's a cooked noodle." "Could you get him to blow it out?" I asked. "I tried that. He doesn't get it. He just keeps sucking the noodle farther in. Call me if anything changes. Neil, don't..." As I went back to my margarita, deep-seated, permanent, selfish feelings bubbled up from the depths of my mind. I felt like Regina resented that I sometimes set aside time to enjoy myself. She, on the other hand, felt that I made her feel lame because she wasn't cool enough. So then she created overblown situations to make me feel guilty and to assuage her own insecurities. But sometimes she didn't do that. I just thought that she did. Darn it, we were so neurotic. But we also realized that such mishugas must be put aside in times of family crisis. A few minutes later, she called again. "He still has the noodle in his nose," she said. I sighed. "I'll be right home."
Neil Pollack reading from his new memoir of the hipster becoming daddy. It's called Alterna Dad. What a great reader. You got a little David Sedaris going on.
Thank you for telling me that. Maybe let somebody who pays people to read know
right,
that.
Right, heads up. Chuck's calling from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Chuck, you're on the air. Hello, Chuck, are you there, my friend?
No, you have Marty from Tingsboro, Mass.
Marty will take you. What do you say?
Well, I say don't surrender. I say celebrate the victory. Parenthood is not a surrender. It's not losing the war or anything like that. It's a victory. I am an at-home dad to two little girls, one 7 1/2, one 5 1/2, the first one born 8 weeks early, and the things that my life has been opened up to through that birth, working with other families with children with special needs, working with the community of early childhood education. I was a photographer. Yeah, I wasn't doing covers of magazines and stuff. I wasn't world famous. I had an exciting life. But nothing's as exciting as the first time my child at almost 2 1/2 finally communicated on her own with sign language, and I didn't institute it. It brought me to tears.
So did you give up something? Do you feel you gave up anything? Did you have to transform what you wanted to be, how you wanted to be, Marty?
I transformed, but it was more of a growing than a pulling away of my wild days and sowing my oats. I was ready to no longer be selfish. I was ready to be selfless. That's what parenthood is about.
Neil, what do you say?
Well, I agree with him. I mean, my book is a celebration of my kid and of being a dad. And, you know, I was never really that reluctant to be a dad. I love kids, and I always have, and I love playing with them. I don't think I've been particularly selfish in becoming a father. I just find myself constantly bemused and maybe a little bit confused at the world in which I find myself. It's like I'm an anthropologist in my own life, but Lord knows I celebrate my kid and everything he says and does on a daily basis. So I agree with Marty to some extent, but I also think that, you know, there's not every day is a magical gift. I just, you know, some days are a real pain in the butt.
But what about the other side of this? And Marty, thanks for your call. In your reading, you're out at Mooching Happy Hour Drinks, something you got to do twice a week, maybe three times. Wow. I mean, how many toddler dads are at happy hour three times a week?
I don't know. But, you know, the reason I got to do that is because I'd woken up with the kid, or I'd, you know, I'd spent 5 hours with him in the morning or in the afternoon, and I took a little break. You know, our lives are very fluid. So it's not as though I'm going to work and then going out and getting drunk and getting home at 9 o'clock. You know, I don't want to say I put in my time, but, you know, we both do our parts. And we were doing this without any kind of daycare, any kind of, you know, sort of babysitter, nanny. And at times we didn't have preschool to help support us. We didn't have any family where we were living. So,
And how are you bringing home the bacon in the midst of all this?
It was freelance writing. And, you know, and I had some books. I had some magazine gigs. Occasionally I would, you know, do some corporate writing if I could find it. My wife was teaching classes at a community college. You know, I was pulling it together any way I could. And, you know, we always somehow managed to pay the bills.
Let me take a call from Duane in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Duane, what do you hear in the story?
I'm just calling because I totally agree with you guys, because I was a former homeless punk rocker living in the gutters of New Orleans, and, you know, I was an artist and doing my own thing, and then I found the right person, decided to change my life, and I still live by my punk rock ideals. But I'm an independent businessman. I own my own airbrush shop.
Do your children profit from you clinging to those ideals, or do they pay a price for you, you know, hanging on to, what, youth?
I think they profit because they see how to fully enjoy life on a daily basis and not get completely caught up in the drudgery of day-to-day working world, you know? I mean, I work, but I have fun. And I provide a good living for my family.
So there's another thumbs up. Neil Pollack, how about it? I mean, you got kickback as well here. When Elijah went to school, had some discipline problems, was biting other kids. You wrote an article about it for, was it Salon?
Salon, yeah.
And saying, you know, what's up with these parents who are so upset about my son biting their kids? And the parents came down on you like a ton of bricks. They said, you are the kind of irresponsible parent who needs to grow up and understand what it really means to be a parent.
Yeah, well, What can you say? I mean, I understood what it really meant to be a parent. I was going through this situation at the time. You know, it's like sometimes parenthood throws you curves that you may not be able to deal with at the moment. I mean, we have learned how to, you know, keep to discipline our son and to understand some of his, you know, behavioral quirks, and all kids have them, you know. And at the time, we were unprepared for those things, and he was in a bad preschool that wasn't giving us good advice, and it was a combination of things. And, you know, it was a national trend, and it still is, that kids are getting expelled from preschool if the preschools don't want to deal with their, you know, their toddler behavioral issues. And
but the other parents went nuts on the web. They said, you guys are clueless, artsy types, self-indulgent, artiste, nitwits, on. You quote it in the book.
Yeah. You know, people are very judgmental about other parents, and I was just trying to be as open and honest as I could. And, you know, I wrote the article like the day after he got expelled, and maybe my tone was a little more whiny and hysterical than it came out, you know, in the book when I had some time to reflect on it, and we were able to see how the situation actually played itself out over a long period. But I wanted to get back to what the caller was saying. Yeah. I think that it's important that parents retain what they enjoyed about life before they had kids, because, you know, the worst thing as a parent is to sort of be bitter and resentful that your kids somehow took something away from you. You know, and we, you know, Regina and I don't feel that Elijah took anything away from us. He, you know, he certainly made us make some adjustments, but, you know, he's done nothing but enhance our lives and sort of, you know, and make them more joyful. And we want him to see, you know, what made our lives interesting and important to us before he came along. And, you know, we're really trying hard not to retreat into something that will make us less happy. Mm.
Neil Pollack's new memoir of young hipster parenthood is Alternadad. I want to bring another voice into this conversation for a moment, if I may, Neil.
Sure.
Joining us from Washington is Jill Hudson Neil. She started a new column for The Washington Post online called Still Me, The Cool Mom's Guide to Staying Hip. She's a fashion and design editor, was at The Washington Post, or is at Washington Post Sunday Magazine, 37 years old, 2 children. Jill Hudson Neil, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good. We're hearing Neil Pollack's story of trying to stay, you know, true to himself, hip as he wants to be, and be a dad. You're in the same kind of age range, doing it, trying yourself, I guess, watching others. Can it be done? Should it be done, Jill?
You know, it can be done, and of course it has to be done. You know, it turns out that if you sort of stay true to yourself, you end up being a better parent. And isn't that what it's about? You know, it's the hardest job you'll ever have. But of course, you know, if you're bitter and resentful and frustrated and exhausted, nobody wins in that family. So, you know, if you try to hang on to your identity, maintain it, you will be a better parent.
What about that phrase that gets tossed around a lot lately? It's not all about you. You're a parent now. Don't try to hang on to everything you had when you were young. You're not a kid. You've got kids.
Yeah, I don't even listen to those people, to be honest. I think, you know, they're parents and moms, actually, I'm finding when I talk to readers and they send me emails, they fall squarely into 2 camps. You get the people that write in and say, you know what, I totally get what you're going for. I struggle with the same thing. Then you get the other people who are really angry, you know, pissed off that I'm even broaching the topic. You know, how can you waste your time with this stuff? We've got Iraq to think about, global warming, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not even actually trying to talk to that segment of the audience. I'm not trying to change their mind.
And Jill, what about...
go ahead.
Sorry, what about the boomers that you're coming in behind here with the sort of hyper-focus on obsessive parenting? I mean, it wasn't always so. I think if you go back to the 40s and 50s, you'll find parents who had a little more loose-reined notion of what parenthood should be. But what about your generation coming in right behind those people with the $400 baby strollers and, you know, everything for Tootsie?
Yeah, you know, the media sort of likes to cling to this perception that, you know, there are these people who are the $400 baby stroller, the yoga Pilates moms. You know, they sort of denigrate those women. But in fact, there are a lot of people in middle America, you know, working class people, middle class people, who have the same desire to want to hang on to their interests now that they have kids. You know, it's not an unusual thing, this idea that, you know, you had a life before you had kids, that life doesn't disappear once you leave the delivery room.
Let's take a call from Toronto, Canada. Myron's on the line. Hi, Myron. You're on the air.
Hey, great program. Listen to it Monday to Friday. I own and operate a small rehearsal studio where I practice and prepare for gigs. I get down there early in the morning before anyone's down there making noise, rehearse, practice for a few hours, and then I head up to a job where I'm a music teacher.
And does parenthood fit into this picture, Myron?
Oh, totally, totally. I'm probably a little older than your guest, but a lot of the threads, you know, I felt like I was experiencing a lot of these things when my child was young. He's 14 years old now, though. Great son. And I think you have to try to organize your life. I'm married to a great woman who's also in a creative field. Like, both of us are professional performing artists, and we've made our lives out of that. Now, we don't earn a lot of money. I think between the two of us, we make one normal salary. So, but that hasn't been a detriment to our way of life. We're still very engaged in our careers. We've had time for our son, and we still do. But, you know, the intense, this is one thing I would say, that the intense period of you know, diapers and all that doesn't last forever.
You're right. So hang in there. Don't lose the creative juice, and you'll get a little running room.
No, you can't. You know, your kid's going to, you know, your kids pick up on that. If you have a creative life and that's what you want to do, and you want to be a performer, you want to be a painter, you know, I think that you have to keep doing it.
Myron in Toronto, our time's short before the break, but we've got it. We appreciate your call. Neil, there's a you go guy and some assurance that the tunnel of the heaviest parenting doesn't last forever.
Well, that's good to know. And it's good to know that, you know, that Jill's out there writing about the same stuff, and it makes me feel like I'm not completely crazy, because sometimes I feel like it. You know, I get the same kinds of responses she does, and maybe even more extreme. And it's nice to know that, you know, that I'm not making this up.
There you go.
Can I just say one other thing?
Yes, Jill.
It's interesting that I think the difference between moms and dads here is that moms are more inclined to let guilt rule their parenting.
Jill Hudson-Neil, thanks a lot for being with us. Melissa's calling from Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Melissa. You're on the air with Neil Pollack.
Yes. Hi, I'm sorry, but I find this almost laughable. I'm sitting here listening to all this angst from these guys, and women have been going through this for centuries. This is a gender issue. It's not just an artistic issue. And the reality, I mean, how do you think all the great books in history got written? Joseph Conrad's wife was home taking care of the kids. Maybe she wanted an alternative lifestyle. And you're not really dealing with the realities that no matter what generation, or even if they're on the fringe of the economies, the reality is a guy's going to make more money than a woman. He's always going to feel more cushion. With the divorce rate, one of the highest groups of poverty are single moms. And the fact is that women don't have these kind of options. And I'm listening to this poor guy whine about what women have been doing for centuries.
Melissa, stick with us. We hear it. Neil Pollack, pick it up. We don't have your wife, Regina, here. But Melissa says, come on, buddy. You're just trying to get out of the deal.
Well, I hear what she's saying. But this is also a result of what I consider to be a sort of a shifting role of gender dynamics within the family. There's really, at this point in our family, no difference between the role of mother and the role of father. Once Regina was done breastfeeding, she and I shared the child rearing duties equally. And
so, why were you at happy hour and she wasn't?
She goes to happy hour sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not, you know, she has just as much freedom to do, I mean, within the range of freedom that we can have to do stuff as I do. And this is not a whine. This is just trying to come to terms with a new reality of fathers who want to be present in the lives of their kids and who are present in their lives of their kids, and trying to come to terms with a permanent adulthood where the roles of mother and father are essentially merged at this point.
Melissa, how about it? Do you buy it? Neil's saying catch up. This is not a male supremacist out
not
at happy
all.
Hour. We may have lost Melissa there. Yep, it looks like Melissa's gone.
She didn't buy into my rhetoric, I guess. But it's, you know, I'm just speaking from personal experience.
Yeah.
And I recognize that, you know, that mothers have had to make sacrifices for their kids throughout the centuries or the millennia or whatnot. But, you know, family dynamics change and you know, demographics change, and this is something that's ongoing.
Melissa, if you've got more to say, let us hear it. Neil Pollack, there's another bit I'd love to hear from the book where you write about how tough it was to try and hang on to this economically. If you could pick up and sure. read some of that for us. Here you are, you're trying to do all this and still be artists, not just punch the clock, not just run a hedge fund, though that clearly would have paid a lot more. But you're
not everyone can run a hedge fund.
Not everybody can. And you had $5,000 worth of taxes on credit cards, health insurance premiums going up. You were behind and behind and behind. Read for us.
We seemed to be falling further and further behind, and it wasn't because we lived outside our means. We'd paid almost exactly the median national price for our house. Our car, when we'd bought it, had been at the median price as well. Plus, it was our only car. Food had been our weakness, admittedly, but when we saw our personal crash coming, we cut out the organics and started shopping at a regular grocery store. We'd bought our TV at a pawn shop, and we didn't fix our 10-year-old stereo when it broke. Also, my vaporizer, the Silver Surfer, had saved me hundreds of dollars a year on weed. A medical bill here, a plane ticket to visit Nana for Christmas there, a couple of small home improvements. It added up, but we weren't technically poor. So how could it be possible that I was having trouble supporting my family? Even taking real dollars into account, I still earned about what my father had at my age. Yet he'd somehow managed to put three kids through college while raising them in one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the country. I, on the other hand, was struggling to raise one kid in a neighborhood two blocks from the interstate on a street that served mainly as a cut-through for beer trucks that were making deliveries to the several liquor stores within walking distance of my house. Then again, I didn't want to work for anyone else, and neither did Regina. Either one of us probably could have, with a little effort, taken a job that offered good health coverage, possibly life insurance, and maybe even discounted daycare. We could have kept our kid at home when he was 18 months old instead of sending him to Montessori school. We might have double-checked before buying a house down the street from a day labor center. But even taking our mildly artsy-fartsy lifestyle choices and assorted mistakes into account, we still should have had enough money to live without the panic of having imminent bankruptcy looming over us. Talking with our friends and even with people we met randomly, we realized we weren't alone. They all had problems similar to ours. Crime-plagued neighborhoods, crummy schools, battles with a nightmarish healthcare bureaucracy, and endless debt. These were austere times. We needed a good national healthcare system and guaranteed decent daycare as much as any American family, but we knew that with our current government, which had cut health benefits for disabled war veterans and referred to the National Education Association as a, quote, terrorist organization, we probably didn't have much of a shot. Our bootstraps were all we had. So we pinned our hopes on the last frontier of a wheezing American economy. Real estate would save us. It was time to sell the house.
Neil Pollack reading from his memoir, Alternidad, and turning there to the piggyback of the house. Neil, a lot of listeners want to talk with you. Nine's calling from Waltham, Massachusetts. Nine, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I think that the punk rock mentality and the Generation X meaningfulness still holds true for me, and that was always being your own person and not having to walk down the same path that your father walked down. And, you know, I'm doing that with my wife, and I both just finished up our bachelor's degrees. Yeah, we're in our 30s, but now my wife is getting her master's at Harvard.
Has it got you living next to the interstate with a mountain of credit card debt and all kinds of economic trouble, Nine, or not?
Yeah, well, we do have debt, and we do have some trouble, but, you know, I don't see that working at a desk job for 30 years is any more safe, as I'm sure people at Enron could attest to.
Good point.
Not necessarily. Yeah, we hear it, and we wish you good luck. Let me get another call from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Devon is on the line. Hi, Devon, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I wanted to call in and just thank Neil and as well as the guest from the Post. I think you guys are taking an important stand and pushing for this transition that is going on in parenting and the transitions in gender roles. And it's particularly inspiring for me at this moment because I started listening to the show on my way to leave a sperm sample. My wife and I are in the process of trying to conceive ourselves, and I found it particularly inspiring and ironic that I would be listening to the show.
So you're on the way to the fertility clinic.
I'm on my way to the fertility clinic, literally sitting in the parking lot, late for the appointment.
Are you more determined than ever, Devin?
and so I'm more excited than ever. I appreciate it.
Do you think? I hope I wasn't. You know, if I guess if I was turning him on with my voice, I guess that, you know, whatever can contribute to the rise of this kind of parenting.
I guess it's the prospect of hanging on to what's before.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. After that's got him going, Devin. Good luck. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Brad. Hi, Brad. You're on the air with Neil Pollack.
Well, hey, yeah, this is a great show. I just want to say that I'm kind of on the other end of the tunnel here.
What do you mean, Brad?
I started playing professionally when I was 14. I still get income from work I did years ago.
As a musician?
I am a musician, yeah. But I'm also, I run a construction company, and it's because of the kids. Now, I heard one of the other talkers say, you know, being kept down by the man. I am the man, but I'm a good man, and I bring all that I've learned through running bands and things like that to my day-to-day life. I show that to my kids. Now my kids, I got one in college, I got one who's out of college. I wouldn't trade that for anything. All those nights on the road, I've done that.
And when the construction work is done, do you still get to, I don't know, pick up the guitar or whatever your piece is?
I've got the Pro Tools studio in the basement. I still do all of that. My kids know that I do that. They know me as a musician. They know me that what I brought to them was you got to be true to yourself. You can't let this go at any point.
So what do you say to Neil Pollack then, Brad? What's your message to the guy who is not quite on the other side of that tunnel yet?
Well, I'm saying there you can't give it up. That there is light at the end of the tunnel. That now that I'm an empty nester, that I don't have to be as concerned with the day-to-day changing the diapers, doing any of that stuff. But I get all the benefits of having the kids. Plus, I never gave up the thing. What I did was I just changed what I was doing, and I bring that same artistry to the day-to-day life of running a construction company. And so I get to share that with a bunch of people, and I have to attribute that to the kids.
Brad, we love that story. Let me put it to Neil. Neil, Brad says, I am the man, but I'm still the man I want to be.
Well, I'm the man, too. I'm just, you know, slightly, you know, I don't run a construction company, but I know you wouldn't want me running your construction company. But
the book's been optioned for the movies. You're in L.A. now, got the house. Is that the goal for you? Do you see that at the end of the tunnel?
Well, the goal is to be able to support my family comfortably and to do what I want to do for a living. Yeah, I mean, that's not such a bad goal, I don't think. And, I think my wife has the same goal that, you know, the family is happy and that the kid is healthy and, you know, smart, and that, you know, we can all live without you know, too much worry. I mean, isn't that what everyone wants for their family?
I guess it absolutely is. Brad in Nashville, thanks for your call. Let's go to Manning, South Carolina, and Shay. Hi, Shay. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Good. How are you doing this morning?
We're great. What do you know, Shay?
Well, every time I hear a discussion about parenting, all I hear is talk of the struggle of parenting. And this talk about trying to struggle to hang on to some sort of identity, you know, I have two children, a four-year-old, a two-year-old, and we're expecting a third. Mm. And my husband and I have really just embraced this change. It doesn't mean that we don't do the things we love anymore. We still do, but we've embraced this change. It's a personal evolution. We've decided that, you know, we have these children, and now the things that we take most joy and pleasure in happen to come with them involved. We want to be with them. We want to spend time with them. Our favorite thing to do in the evenings is to take a walk around the neighborhood and look at the trees and talk about the flowers, and that's what we enjoy doing. The things that we enjoy doing before, sure, we enjoy them, but they pale in comparison to the things that we do with our children.
But what about then, Shay, let's say in Neil Pollack's case, he kind of wants to be a rocker and a writer and a cultural provocateur. Those things may not immediately pay so well. What do you say to that? Should he try and hang on to those things, even if it is a struggle to do it while he raises children?
Yeah, I definitely think you should hang on to those things that you love. And I think a creative endeavor is wonderful. It keeps the mind going, and I think it's wonderful for children to see the creative process occurring. But I do think that you've got to make a priority, and you have to decide whether you are more important or your children are more important. You know, there in the book, The Prophet, there's a metaphor that I think of all the time where you have this picture of an archer, and the parent is actually the bow, and the children are the arrow. And the thing that really stands out in that metaphor to me is the fact that once you become a parent, you're no longer the arrow. You're the bow.
Neil Pollack, what do you say? Shay's bringing the prophet and Khalil Gibran to us here. What do you say?
Well, I say that I first of all, you know, nothing is more important to me than my kid, and he's obviously my first priority, and nothing's going to change that. And, you know, I think that, you know, Regina and I have certainly reorganized our life around him as we had to. But I will say this. I wish we had the option of taking our kid for a walk around the neighborhood and looking at the flowers. You know, where we lived in Austin, it's like we were constantly being assaulted by junkies asking us for money and beer trucks were rumbling by all the time. And where we live now in L.A. is a slightly nicer neighborhood, but we're also always being chased by stray dogs. And because they're roaming around the neighborhood at all times.
So some economic facts of life.
Yeah, there. I mean, it's, you know, I would love to live in a verdant neighborhood that actually had flowers. Well, but this neighborhood now we're living in is better, but it, you know.
You want the picket fence and the punk.
Let's put it this way. On Halloween, there were several iron gates we had to pass through in order to get to the front door so the old lady could hand us the 3-year-old candy.
Right.
So, you know, not everyone is able to live in a neighborhood that that affords those privileges. So, you know, we take him to the aquarium or the zoo or wherever we have to go. But, I mean,
a little more you'd like. There's one more good call here from Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Julia's on the line. Hi, Julia. You're on the air with Neil Pollack.
Hi. I grew up in New York City, and I was a young punk hanging out at CBGBs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to the suburb where my kids were young and raised them still with my kind of nonconformist sort of punk rocker attitude, I think.
Yeah.
And now my 14-year-old, who's like really cool and listens to great ska music and stuff, is like ready to drop out of school and has a total screw this attitude about school and kind of everything.
So are you afraid you gave him that with your own?
Yeah, I really am. I kind of think that I fostered that attitude, and I regret it, you know, in a way. I mean, I can't really change who I am, but I don't know. Maybe if I had moved to the suburbs, it wouldn't have turned out that way.
Something to think about as our clock ticks down here. Julia, thanks for that. Neil, what about it?
Well, I would say that, you know, 14-year-old kids give parents from all kinds of backgrounds trouble.
And they don't all drop out.
They don't all drop out.
Or even talk about it.
No, of course not. But again, like, from all kinds of backgrounds, you know, you just never know what your kid's going to end up becoming. I'm sure Julia did the best she could, and just like my wife and I are, and just like parents of all different aesthetics and stripes do. And
maybe you want to raise a rebel.
Well, I mean, I want to raise an independent thinker. A rebel. I mean, I was never a rebel when I was a kid. I mean, I got straight A's, and, you know, I went to Boys State, and, you know, did all the goody-goody Alex P. Keaton things that I was supposed to do. So, you know, but I always thought for myself, and I think, you know, that's more important. And, you know, I mean, I sympathize with what Julia is going through, and, you know, it could happen to me, but it also might not. And I don't think the person she was as a kid, I don't know how much it has to do with what the kid is doing now. And I just, you know, I hope she, you know, I hope they, you know, find some peace.
We all find out, or think we might. Neil Pollack, we appreciate your letting us into your journey through the woods of parenthood. The new book is Alternadad. Neil, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Hey, it was great to be here, and, you know, have me back anytime.
Okay, you got it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.